So my brief was to look at, I'm an accountant for the Ernhill Farming, my brief was to look at the economic impact of the rules. So that's fine. I have to study the rules to decide what they mean. And so when I look at the big picture, there's a couple of points I'd like to make really around the rules. And the first thing, it looks like an impending compliance nightmare to me for farmer clients in terms of cost of compliance. So I guess what I'm saying to you, if you're going to write these rules, and which we accept this is what's going to happen, write them carefully, because rules always have unintended consequences. Inland Revenue is always producing new rules around tax, and 90% of the time they're trying to fix the unintended consequence from the last rule that they wrote. So once you go down this road, it is going to be never ending, and the better you can get it at the start, the less expensive it's going to be for yourselves. The second thing I would say is that when we have rules, the next thing we have is the keepers of the rules, and they are people that you will employ, and they have special glasses that make everything black and white, and it tends to create a conflict between compliance and collaboration. And some of the farmer submitters have talked about the collaborative nature of farm plans and so forth, and I do wonder if farmers that are participating in that process should be given some slack in terms of their consent requirements. I think you need to do something to acknowledge farmers that are having a collaborative approach. Sometimes I get stopped by traffic officers. I've yet to have one say to me, "Good morning, sir, I'm here to collaborate with you." So the keepers of the rules don't really have that mentality, and that's one of the difficulties I think that you have. The other point I'd make around the rules is that they work best if they make sense to the people they apply to. And so there's supposed science behind these rules, but it isn't intuitively obvious to a lot of us. There seems to be an assumption that all the sediment in rivers arises from farming practices, and I don't believe that's the case. I white bait on the Waiatoto River in South Westland, which runs for about 40 kilometres through an alpine valley where there's no farming and bush, and there's probably about 3 or 4 k's of where it comes out through from the mountains, and there's no dairy farming, there's no cultivation, there's low intensity grazing. And when that river's in flood, it is brown from bank to bank. So that sediment, I think, is coming from riverbank erosion and the turbulence of the water stirring up sediment that's in the river from previous riverbank erosion. So, you know, farmers cannot control the natural process of a river and riverbank erosion. So that's the point I'm making. Okay, so when I'm looking at these rules, there's a lot of them that relate to slope, but there hasn't been any discussion on how you measure slope. And in fact, if we look at the photos of the rolling country of Waimahaka, the natural contour is curves, and that applies to most of Southland. It's mathematically impossible to measure the slope of a curve. You can measure a slope at a point on the curve by measuring the slope of the tangent to the curve. Slope can only be measured in the context of a plane. So we have rules that talk about slope, and in the context of topography, it's actually a mathematical nonsense. But happily, there's a reasonably simple fix, which is to accept that what you're really talking about is the mean slope, which is the average for the area. Talking to a surveyor client, there is elevation data available from Google Earth and other commercial providers that basically has been derived from satellite information, and that measures the elevation at different points across a grid, and the quality of that information really depends on the resolution. So whether those points are 100 metres apart or 50 metres apart, and I understand it could be down to 10 metres apart. So once you've got elevation points, you can then draw a triangle between the points, which creates a plane, measure the slope of the plane, do that for the entire area, and you can create a mean slope for the area that you've measured. And for surveyors, it's reasonably bread and butter stuff. So that can be done from the desk using software type solutions. So the question then becomes, what's the unit of area that we're going to apply to our calculation of mean slope? And I would suggest that it should be on a paddock by paddock basis, because that's basically how farmers run their farms, if they're doing cultivation or so forth. So, and that information could be created for farms, and if the fences don't change, that information isn't going to change from year to year. Within that, you might perhaps suspect that if we had a 100 hectare paddock and 50 hectares was flat and 50 hectares was steep, that we're going to have the average is going to be misleading in terms of. So thinking about that, it seemed to me that if you had a provision that there should be no contiguous area within the paddock that exceeded a certain amount, I've used 20 degrees in my letter, but I agree with the submitters that 20 degrees is probably too low, that 25 degrees, like a normal, a low pitched hip roof on a house is 23 degrees. It's not very steep really. So you could have that kind of a provision, and it would also mean that in terms of the setback from creeks, looking at the Smith's property, if you were fencing setbacks, you'd have to, when you got to a steep bit, you'd have to bring the fence up another 20 metres and so forth. At least under that model, you could have an agreed mean slope for the paddock, and then you've got an agreed setback. It would also mean, we'll just leave it on that one, Ian, like, it would also mean if you've got a small area in the paddock that exceeds the slope level for cultivation, you can still cultivate through it, because they create safety problems if you've got to go around them. Sometimes it's easier to run off and run through them. And using Ian's example there, if those steep areas are only a small area, then the effect's going to be less than minor. And if you're looking at what your plan is trying to do, you're trying to create an effect across the province. And I don't see that having a little bit of fudge factor in terms of smaller areas is going to make a material difference to your plan. So I think really it's probably, if you want to progress that one further, I'd prefer you to my survey client. I think most surveyors would find that they've got that information at their fingertips. So that then sort of led me to having to actually addressing the question of the economic impact. And because of the nature of that farm, just in terms of the intensive winter grazing, there is a 25% loss of the effective ground by having to upscale the brassica crop to 80 hectares. And that might not seem much, but it would have a 10% effect on the carrying capacity of that farm, which has more than a 10% effect on the value, has a 10% effect on the value of the farm, but more than 10% effect on the profitability, because most of the profit is achieved at the margin. And I guess the concern, the elephant in the room, is when we have these rules in place for 5 years and the sediment in the rivers doesn't change, and it isn't really going to because the sediment's coming from riverbank erosion anyway, and we decide to broaden the rules and include pasture grazing and green feed in the definition of intensive winter grazing, then these guys are out of business if that day ever happens. So that's my submission, gentlemen.
Thank you. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Only one other thing I'd like to add is we had Nathan Crookshank out from Environment South, one of the environmental officers, and we looked around for what I just had to get my head around where the thinking may be what you could get a consent for and what you couldn't get a consent for. And the maximum that I could establish from that is on that, at that 102 hectares of this 413 hectare property come into effect, we could get maybe for 20% of it. The rest of it he felt was critical source. He felt was a bit of a lowland swamp off a hill, a flat land off a hill that wouldn't, you wouldn't work that, would you? You wouldn't work that, would you? You couldn't use that, could you? And it led me to despair, absolute despair. We're just invested in trying to get our business on a footing that gives a mix for the next generation, because we've done a lot of work on the previous enterprise and it said sell it. And so we put this and low impact system into place. We spent a lot of this money getting low impact dairy system into place, and then have this put in front of us, which puts us quite at risk at the moment. I've said to people, our equity is less than when we started farming. Yeah. So in the end, a decision we'll make and what will happen, and I look at it as the beginning of the clearance of the Highlands again in Scotland. And I go back and say it took 100 years to get all the peasants and everybody out of the land so it could extensively be used. But the trouble is they went to Canada, Australia, New Zealand. But where are they going this time? That's what I put it, as the rules get too tough. And, well, I think we need to come back. Every person needs a farmer three times a day. And we look at the headline in the paper today. A restaurateur saying it's absolutely ludicrous that vegetables are so expensive because of the supply and demand cycle. And we'll just leave it at that.
All right, thank you very much. We'll see if we have any questions for you.
Thank you. Yes, I am just trying to get my head around your concerns about cultivation on sloping ground.
Yep.
Just looking at Rule 25 here, which is, as far as I understand it, and I could be corrected here, but it doesn't prohibit you from cultivating on these slopes you're talking about. But if it's over certain degrees, you have to get a consent. So if you had a consent for a long period of time, 10, 15 years, that had conditions around it saying what you could do and what you couldn't do, would that not be satisfactory?
Yes, it would be. I don't disagree with that. And that's why I had Nathan out to talk to me about what the general feeling around the issue was now. And what he felt, and it's just his interpretation, we get consent for. And he said, you wouldn't do this, you wouldn't do that, would you? And that led me to believe that there was going to be a serious question mark about getting a consent for that.
Yeah, okay.
What does the consent do other than cost us money?
Other than good practice.
If we're already putting in good practice, what does a consent do? There's no financial gain, there's no gain other than keeping somebody employed at Environment South. Sorry, it's pretty emotional stuff.
Yeah. No, I understand your concerns, all right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good morning. I was just wanting to understand what you're telling us around direct drilling. Were you really telling us that it has its place, but it's not necessarily a silver bullet?
It's not going to be the silver bullet, because what's going to happen is that when you need so much tonnage of crop to feed your stock in the winter. And if you have a good year, you're fine. But what's going to, then in a poor year, everybody's going to run around and import a lot of extra stuff onto the direct drilling paddocks, and it's not going to have a different impact, but it's going to add a lot of cost. And the second thing with direct drilling, and our assumption of it, and what we've done, is that 1 year and three, it works out about the same cost as cultivation. 1 year and three, it ends up twice the cost of cultivation because all the sprays you're going to add. So, and the 1 year and three, we get all the sprays and that, you have the less yield.
Yeah, so it's dependent on ideal conditions.
Yeah, it is. It's very more susceptible to ideal conditions than working there.
You were referring to Old Matara, but you haven't got Old Matara on your property.
No.
No.
We're just surprised how it changed.
Yes.
It was just a question of the science.
Thought that was the case. Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your presentation. A lot of practical information there. I think if I could sum up one of the key things you're saying, it is that around farm environment management plans and consent applications, you want clarity, definition, and not much subjectivity.
Yeah, and recognition. Recognition for each farmer's individuals.
Yeah, so treating, okay. Well, that's my primary question. My secondary question is, what were those glaucous eucalypts around the duck pond?
Sorry?
The glaucous coloured eucalypts around the duck pond.
What? They're cordata, and I'll explain
I know what cordata is.
Yeah.
They explain the benefit of them. No, we put them around our tree plantations, and what happens with tree plantation, pine plantations, they hang their branches away out into the paddock, and you get this dirt area that they can't grow grass on. Once we've decided to put eucalypts, they're more upstanding, and the light comes through them, and we've got no bare area under our trees.
And they look nice.
Well, I quite
and
like
they grow
that.
To the top. They grow beautiful branches way to the top.
Yeah, I know
what
cordata
is. Where a lot of the eucalypts, they don't.
Yeah. And
they're meant to coppice as well.
They're meant to, but that eucalyptus also is coastal. It'll grow in a coastal environment. Sorry.
Thank you.
Actually, they also feed the tuis.
Amazing at the moment. They're just beautiful.
My question, are you familiar with the 42A report?
Yes.
Have your concerns actually been addressed through the recommendation of the officer, or is there things that you would like us to consider over the market?
It took me 4 weeks of turmoil and sleepless nights to try and find, work through that 42A report with virtually no recognition to that. And my wife, Heather, will say to you that I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning often, and my head was absolutely bashed to bits with, is this farm going to survive?
Yeah, it was really disturbing. I have to say, Ian put the effort in for the original submission, but once I started reading the 42A report, it just was heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. To read some of the recommendations, and the word, I have to say, the use of the word I, all the way through it, was I this, I that. So it was like one person had control over our whole future in farming. That's what it felt like, reading that 42A report.
Just in terms of that, that's normal practice. The 42A report is independent advice to us on an analysis of the submissions. And so it's authored by a primary author who draws on a whole lot of input from other technical people. So that's just the way those reports need to be written, because we need to understand that it is the author's opinion. So that's one line of advice to us, and that's the preferable approach. If a 42A report says we think this, or the council thinks that, that's not that helpful for us.
Okay.
Just to let you know that.
There's other ways of writing it though, isn't there?
Well, I'm just telling you what the standard
okay.
is. Can I qualify that by saying you had 900 submissions originally. You haven't got as many wanting to talk to submissions as you thought you were going to get because they requested time to talk to it. I seriously questioned whether it was worth coming here after reading the 42A report. What I'm trying to say is that's the next contact we had with the system.
Right.
And it's like we put all this effort in and we just stamped on again.
Yeah.
No, so we're trying to express maybe why some people haven't come.
Sorry
to do that, but it's been an emotional journey, and I wrote from the beginning here, I'm not going to apologise to be emotional, but we'll try to get through it however our livelihood and our future is at stake.
Yeah, I understand that concern and just reassure you that it is worth coming in and presenting to us.
No, I realise that, but I'm just trying to say that.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.